Natalie, Lori, and Ashley. Any other
Got it. Thank
committee
you so much.
members? No? Okay. So welcome everyone to the ASH Independent Oversight Committee meeting. It's October 21st, 2021. It's 6:05 p.m. and we've met quorum. So before we begin, I'd like to welcome everyone to our meeting tonight and ask if there's any disclosure of conflict of interest. Okay, with none being heard, have the members had a chance to review the meeting minutes of our last meeting?
Yes, I have.
Okay, do I have a motion to...
Hi, Barb just joined.
Okay. Hi, Barb.
Hi.
So I think I heard, was that Natalie or was that Dee that motioned?
That was Dee. I've read it.
Okay. And do I hear
and this
second?
Is Natalie, our second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So moved. The minutes are moved. What we want to do tonight, I don't know if we have any other committee members or from the public, but what we want to do is get a quick update from ADOA. I'll talk quickly about an update from ASH, and then we'll go over an administrative separation architectural seclusion guidelines that Melissa will present, and that will be an educational portion of the meeting, meaning that anyone can ask questions. And we'll ask Melissa how she'd like us to manage that when she gets started. So, Larry, do you have any updates from ADOA?
Yes, I have a quick update for the group. At the last meeting, there was a motion to approach the ASH administration again regarding having the administration attend the IOC meetings to help with the flow of information. And open the line of communication a little bit more and to help break down the silos that have been built up over the years. The ASH administration's response was, you know, their concerns with the comments coming from the patients. You know, they don't want to have patients making allegations during the IOC meeting. And during a recorded IOC meeting, with the understanding that the representatives of the administration, they don't want to create a dynamic which is productive or not therapeutic for the patients during the meeting. So that is the answer that I received back from the ASH administration. So I just want to inform the committee of that. And other
members, one thing we may say that ASH.
Oh, sorry.
When ASH used to attend our meetings, even the administration before this one, we had forensic patients that were active patients and members of the committee. And it, at that point, I mean, this just goes years back. So this is something new because they used to attend with patients in the room.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And I don't know why they had to have a change of heart on that. You know, again, we can pursue this more when a new director comes aboard. Or we can pursue it now without a director. So it's entirely up to the committee on how y'all want to approach the motion.
I mean, maybe we could see if they'd be open to attending the meetings, and then when public comment happens, log off. I
was just going to suggest that too. Yeah, there's no reason why they couldn't at least attend up until the point at which the public comment comes in.
Yeah, I suggested that to them.
Yeah, and I have as well. So the response is the same response that I just read you guys. They do not want to attend the meeting.
Larry, does that respond? That includes the advocate?
Correct.
Is that all of admin? Okay, thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Boy, they just keep digging themselves into a hole.
And then do we anticipate when the new director will start?
I do not have any information on that. I didn't ask either, so I can certainly reach out to our contact and ask to see if they have any knowledge of an anticipated start date of the new director.
Okay, do we need to make a motion?
Has somebody already been found? Sorry, has somebody already been found? Are they? No.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, to be honest with you, Dee.
Okay, sorry.
So if we would like a motion or like to follow up, then we'd have to make a motion for that.
Well, this
now,
is Natalie,
I
and
motion
I motion
that we get that information. Yeah, and I'll second that, Natalie.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Okay.
Aye.
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 Okay.
Aye.
So that goes forward. Okay. Any other updates? And Larry's the messenger, so we mean no.
The guidelines for your committee has been approved by our director Tobin at ADOA. I'll be posting those on the website. And I will be getting those back out to Lori for her records, and she can disseminate that back out to the committee as she sees fit. Other than that, the year-end reports for 2021 have been all received, submitted those for approval and to have those filed as well. So things are moving along. Just unfortunately, this one issue that keeps coming up, it's a dead end for us. So we'll keep working on it for you and see where hopefully get some resolution to this sooner than later.
Thank you. Now, one other thing that I was asked, do you anticipate that we'll come back in person anytime soon? Because we have some committee members that have never met each other. So I don't know if we want to go every time, but it'd be nice if we could make maybe once a quarter or so go down to a big conference room.
I'll have to reach out to my director to find out if they will allow general public meetings in state buildings. I would assume that should be okay. But I'm not sure. I will certainly ask and I'll let everybody know. But yeah, so I think eventually, I think it would be great for the group to meet, see everybody face to face. Again, like you mentioned, it doesn't have to be every meeting. It could be once a quarter, biannually, however you want to do it. It's fine. But I'll let the group know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Okay. So with that, I'll leave it up to the committee. Do you want news from ASH administration on the event that occurred at the hospital, or do you want to go on with the educational meeting and then go back? I can do either way.
I'd like to hear the update about the suicide.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah.
Okay, so I did get a message. I had heard about it last night, and today I got a message from administration if I could please call. And I did, and I was told that a patient on the forensic unit had self-injured himself, and it was a terminal event. The police were notified, they came on scene, they transferred the patient to Valleywise. Dr. Woods and the team are looking into the incident. And the person is deceased. So it was a terrible, terrible event. I heard allegedly that this person had been in CRU, community reentry, and had achieved levels, but had been called back from CRU. Back in forensics, and had been very, very depressed for a while. So it was a terrible, terrible event. And I'm hoping that there's some grief counseling for the other patients and for staff. I know that there was some action taken in reaction to this event, as we've heard and you'll hear later on during our report, our patient visit report. And then we'll also go over the community forum reports on both civil and forensic. So I want you to know that for those that hadn't heard, that it was a very sad, sad event. So that's all we know, but it's being looked into and investigated.
And Lori, was it done in the presence of other patients and staff?
From what I understand, it was in a art kind of recreation area, and that that the in those areas there are sharp youths. I'm sure they're supervised, but you know, I don't know the details of this incident. But I know that the person used scissors, and I allegedly, I can't remember if I went into the restroom and used those scissors to harm in a self-harming manner. So.
Hey, Lori, this is Dee. Maybe there's some information that I've heard that the CRU, that there are plans to not reopen it, that they are, I heard, and it could be just rumor, that they were looking to rent that space out so those patients weren't going to go back there. And that was something fairly recent and may have contributed to this patient's despair.
And I think we heard that too during a visit, but I think if people are referring to the Psychiatric Center of Excellence, which there was a RF request for proposal several years ago. At that point, they were looking to lease buildings. They were looking for people that wanted to tear down those two really old buildings with mold. That tear down is actually occurring as I think it started, or they're in preparation to start tearing those buildings down. And also, there has been money allocated to build transitional housing, and I have it in my notes somewhere, in the Bauer Park area. So I don't think, the knowledge I have is that the CRU up for sale and things like that, that was in the RFP years ago. I haven't heard anything, but if there's interest, we could request information on that. If we want to motion and vote on that, then we can ask what the plans are for CRU.
I think that would be important to those patients who, number one, were there before, and number two, earned a right to maybe go there. I mean, that is for the patients and something I'm sure that they look forward to.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have a second? And then we can find out. I think there's
second. Yeah.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
I'm sorry, guys. Can you tell me what the names are who motioned and second?
D motion.
D was the first. Yeah.
And Bulberg was right. Second.
I didn't hear the second name, guys. There were too many people talking.
I think Melissa was.
Well, we coded.
Okay. So the other thing, and we'll find out the details. We heard that of the 20 plus plus beds in CRU 8 are currently being used. But we'll find out, we'll ask for the details on that. Okay, with that being said, let's turn it over to Melissa. Now, Larry, can Melissa share, or are you sharing the slides? And let me just say, this is going to be, we can ask questions. We'll ask Melissa how she'd like us to ask those questions, whether you want to break and ask questions, or whether you want people to raise their hand. Well, we can raise
Melissa, do you want to share as you go, or do you, what do you want to do? There you go. Perfect.
I'm on mute. Let's see if it works. So do you see the full screen?
Yes.
Yep. Perfect. Looks great.
Great. Okay. So, you know, I think if somebody wants to ask a question, certainly please feel free to interrupt me, but I'm going to go through a lot of information really quickly. And there's a definite general gist to what I'm going to be presenting. So it may be good to wait until the end, but, you know, please jump in if you like. And I will tie this to the administrative separation discussion at the very end too, so we can look at that a little bit.
Excuse me, I can't see the screen. I don't, I only have it by the call by phone, but I also have my iPad open.
It's in the agenda. It's in the agenda that I sent out, that Larry sends out. It's a Google Meet. So in that.
Okay, that's how I got on. That's how I logged on.
With the Google Meet number, did you do?
Yeah,
audio?
I put in the PIN.
There should be a link there for you. You can click on the link and it should open that up for you.
Okay, I actually tried that earlier, and okay, maybe I'll just.
Okay, so go ahead, Melissa. We'll keep it timely.
Okay, sure. Well, I hope you're able to. Get on there. So thank you. Just a quick background so you understand why I'm presenting. I'm an architect. I'm very much committed to understanding the impacts of what we design on the individuals who are using those spaces. I've been working on public projects, justice projects, meaning like corrections, detentions, and courthouses, public safety, health projects, behavioral health, community and education projects for over 30 years. Something that's relevant about some of my background, I'm the past chair of, so there's the American Institute of Architects, which is our professional organization, and there's a specific knowledge community that focuses on these types of facilities. I'm going to call that the Justice Group, just to keep it sort of simple. I'm past chair of that, and I co-chaired the research portion of that, the component of that, for over a decade. I've specifically presented research on solitary confinement twice to our National Ethics Council, and I'll share a ruling that we passed just last year. And there's many that I collaborate with who've contributed to much of what I'm going to be sharing. And as I said, I'm going to go through a lot. It's going to be a high level of information, but I want you to be aware of the national and some international standards and research. As it applies to architecture. So just really quickly, because again, we're talking about seclusion, can also be, you can see all the names on the screen, and if you don't have a screen in front of you, there solitary confinement goes by many names, isolation, protective custody, seclusion, restricted housing, and it goes on. This is definitely the most extreme form of incarceration. Generally, what this means is that an individual is confined to a space, to a cell, for 22 to 24 hours a day. There's minimum human interaction or sensory stimulation. The environment has maximum control over the individual. They may be kept away from general population for periods ranging from a few days to months or years. No contact visits generally, or congregate activities such as exercise or dining, education or religion. And most of these spaces lack windows. So there's 24-hour artificial light. The next series of standards, and I'm going to share, illustrate some of these best practices, as I just mentioned. But this particular slide is just showing that, unfortunately, solitary confinement is still being used in all of the many of the states, I should say. This slide is actually from 2016. Arizona is in the middle. It's hard to see, and I can't see it close enough to point to it, but it's in the middle. However, there is significant movement to reduce or eliminate the use of it. And as many of you, I'm sure, know, President Obama banned the use of solitary confinement for juveniles in federal prisons. That was in 2016, as well as for those who were or are incarcerated serving time for low-level infractions. I'm sure many of you have seen images. And again, remember, right now I'm focusing on prisons and jails, and we'll relate this back in a little bit. On the left, you're looking at some images from Pelican Bay. There's an exercise yard on the far left. In the center, it's a cell from Rikers Island. And in contrast, you're seeing a maximum security room at Halden Prison in Norway. Okay, so the first standard that I really want to share is from the National Commission on Correctional Healthcare and the NCCHC. Establishes standards, right, for health services in correctional facilities. And we use these as architects. And the important point here that I want to make is highlighted in red. And here it notes that the way the NCCHC approaches solitary confinement is regardless of the term used. Remember all those terms I mentioned in the beginning. Regardless of the terms used, an individual who's deprived of meaningful contact with others is considered to be in solitary confinement. Okay, so it's not so much the term as it is the function. Another standard is the Vera Institute of Justice. They're a nonprofit national research and policy organization. I don't expect you to read everything that's on the slide. You're gonna see a lot of slides with a lot of text. Vera's been rethinking the practice of solitary confinement. They have a project called Rethinking Restrictive Housing Project. They partnered with 5 prisons and jails across the country to study their use of restrictive housing and also to make recommendations to reduce the practice. A growing number of corrections leaders really want to improve the safety and well-being of those who live and work in these facilities. And here, you know, what I wanted to show that's really important is, you know, there are a couple of recommendations, a couple of points that they make that are really, really important. One is the note about not releasing people that are in restrictive housing directly to the community. That's definitely not something that they recommend, and there's a lot of research about that. There's also quite a bit of research. Research provided is not conclusive evidence that restrictive housing makes facilities or communities safer. So I think that's an important point. The American Correctional Association. These are standards that that are used for operating correctional facilities, as well as designing correctional facilities. And as you can see, about 8 years ago, they revised the standard to create living conditions that approximate those in the general population, right? So that they're similar, the same as the general population. And the details of this include access to natural daylight, allowing for social interaction, and having more square footage available. The American Bar Association, similarly, has standards too and conditions of confinement. And I've just highlighted again some of these very high level but very important points, not depriving prisoners or staff of natural light to permit reading, right? And we're going to talk a lot about natural light, but then there's also the darkness and being able to have real dark to be able to sleep. So almost a year ago, the American Institute of Architects updated our code of ethics. and this is something that we live by. I was part of that, of the leadership group at the time. It's a very, very complex subject, but ultimately the AIA added this ruling, and it says that an AIA architect cannot design spaces intended for torture, including indefinite or prolonged solitary confinement. And, you know, I think this is a very powerful statement. And the word torture is not used lightly. I'm going to talk about this a tiny bit more later. But it's something from the United Nations. They stated that anything over 15 days in solitary confinement is torture. The Massachusetts Department of Corrections, they're going to be implementing a new model. And this model grows out of, first of all, this research by Dr. Falcon, who's just amazing, but also out of a model being used in Canada from the Correctional Service Canada. It's the Structure Intervention Unit. And again, this is difficult to see, but what's important is they are also implementing conditions that are similar to general population, that there's windows, that there's access to a yard, that there they continue programs and interventions, that there's access to personal property, that there's access to visitors and teachers and legal counsel and others. And then there's the International Committee of the Red Cross. And I'm just going to read the top part here. Spaces designed for solitary confinement should be avoided or at least restricted to a bare minimum. It's well established that isolation can cause significant physical and mental harm. Deprivation of meaningful human contact is a form of ill treatment, especially if prolonged. When detainees need to be separated from others for their own or others' safety, steps need to be taken through design and operations to minimize social isolation, to provide decent living conditions, including natural light, maintaining direct supervision by and contact with staff, and retaining access to services. And the International Committee of the Red Cross created guidelines called Towards Humane Prisons, a principled and participatory approach to prison planning and design. And that's what you see here. I was actually honored to be one of the reviewers. The attitude of this guide is relevant, and this is what the American Institute of Architects references as a baseline. I mentioned the United Nations. The United Nations minimum rules for treatment of prisoners, adopted as the Mandela Rules, focuses on dignity, on value as human beings, and prohibition of torture and other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. You know, here you see four very simple principles from the guidelines. They are: do no harm, maintain a maximum of normality, and that's referring to a normalized environment, promote health and personal growth, and maintain connections to society. It also goes on to say, and I think this is very powerful and speaks to the impacts, again, of our built environment, that four of the most common causes of harm can be mitigated by design. And I won't go through all the bullets, but again, it specifically talks about solitary confinement and how detrimental it is to minimize social isolation. Or how important, excuse me, not detrimental, how important it is to minimize social isolation. Also, as part of the American Institute of Architects, the justice group that I'm part of, updated what is called the Green Guide to Justice. And the guide is really about looking at a more holistic and systemic approach to justice reform and how architecture is a part of that. We just published an update last month, and this is just a very small excerpt from that. But there is a section specifically devoted to solitary confinement, which advocates following the Red Cross guidelines, minimizing use of solitary confinement. And when it must be used, there's no reason that the spaces cannot be dignified and humane. There's another national organization, the Academy of Neuroscience for Architecture. The mission of the Academy is to promote and advance knowledge that links neuroscience research to a growing understanding of human responses to the built environment. Why this is important, we meet every 2 years, and well, we meet more often than that, but we meet formally every 2 years at the Salk Institute, and it brings together architects and neuroscientists and other allied disciplines to conduct research. I have this slide here because this is such a significant issue. The effects are so deleterious, and there's not nearly enough research that this was a major topic at one of the conferences, and it continues. This is just showing some very important criteria that we consider when we're looking at design of correctional facilities in general, and certainly any kind of space, right? And this is from a workshop. Again, it was a group of scientists and environmental psychologists, administrators from jails and prisons, and architects. We came together to prioritize a research agenda. Here you see again, solitary confinement and isolation is a major issue that's being prioritized. Out of that workshop, we were able to conduct a study at a jail up in Northern California where we looked at the impact of views of nature on stress. Significant impacts. We know this from healthcare, but we were also able to conduct specific research in a jail environment. And again, this study showed significant impacts, faster recovery from stress, improved cognitive performance, less fatigued, better attentiveness. And then, as you all know, many of those who are incarcerated have experienced quite a bit of trauma. Women particularly are a very high percentage. And when you combine that with lack of coping mechanisms, you can imagine the outcomes. People under stress seek social support as a source of help, but when you're in isolation, right, you lose that one coping mechanism. You don't have that social support. In previous IOC meetings, we've, you know, referenced and talked about a lot of the research regarding some of the outcomes of isolation. The next few slides, just a small fraction of all the research that's out there. Again, it's just some snapshots. It's not meant to be comprehensive by any means, but you know, it's very important here. This is Huda Akil at University of Michigan. She looks at the impacts of isolation, and again, you can see, you know, detrimental to mental and physical health, disruption of circadian rhythms, depression, you know, and it goes on. You know, Dr. Haney, Craig Haney, he often testifies before Congress. He worked with President Obama on the federal prison reform. Again, here you can see some of those impacts of isolation, sleep disturbance, anxiety, paranoia, self-mutilation. Again, Stuart Grassian also has done quite a bit of research. Here you can see some of that. And then also, one of the things that we talked about a little bit earlier were some of the stressors and coping mechanisms. And it's just really, really important to remember that we're increasing these stressors, right? The loss of the social contact, the fact that you're in there is involuntary. Much of the time it's long-term, and then you have this sensory deprivation. So I'm coming to a close, and I just wanted to bring this back to the administrative code, because I think I know that ASH is trying to help us understand, although there's still some ambiguity. You know, this is pulled from the administrative code. We've gone over this before. The thing is, there's no physical environment standards specific to administrative separation, and this is not terminology used widely. So it would be good if they could follow up. Perhaps it is somewhere. There are other standards in the administrative code but those are included for seclusion and restraint and some others in physical plant standards. But again, they're not cross-referenced to administrative separation. So it's hard to know what is necessarily being used to help guide. So I think that might be the last slide. And I know that was a lot and very fast.
That was great. I mean, really good information. And it kind of supports our concern for extended isolation. So again, this was educational. It was very well done, Melissa. And does anyone have questions for Melissa?
I have a question. Is this presentation available to the public anywhere that I can put it in the notes so that people can maybe go back and reference it if they want to read it more carefully?
I think so. I just want to check that I have everything cited correctly, right?
Okay.
Because unlike a paper, like if it was a paper, I would have things cited. I want to make sure that I referenced everything correctly.
Okay. And then once that's done, it might get put up on like the IOC website. Do we know anything about that?
No, I would probably put this out to the committee themselves. I would just email the file directly to you guys.
Okay.
For
great,
review.
Thank you.
Okay. Any questions for Melissa?
I have a question, Lori.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it was maybe more clear where at least I have some ambiguity about what is guiding, you know, what guidelines there are being used. So I don't know if we need to.
Well, we can ask. Every time we've asked about administrative separation, it is, I think we've gotten explanations that it's administrative, it's not seclusion, it's not, you know, it's not any, it's not restraint, it's for the safety, they're doing it for the safety of the units. I mean, I think that's what they've responded. They haven't really given us a lot of details.
Right, but then they've also said that they've also said that they've followed the guidelines when we asked about the physical environment, and mm-hmm. and I just have ambiguity about which part of the code they're referencing for that.
Would you like to make a recommendation again, specifically saying, you know, what are the physical guidelines that they're following for this administrative separation?
Yes, and if it would help, mm-hmm. I could either send to Natalie or mark up the notes when they come out, the exact sections of the code that I'm questioning.
Okay. So would you like to send myself and Natalie the exact code so we can mm-hmm. ask the question correctly? So do we want a motion to ask about the physical specifications based on the code?
Yes, I can make them. I will make a motion to ask about the physical conditions based on the code, and I will send some of that detail.
Okay, and I can second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay. So it passes. Okay. I don't know if anyone else from any other IOC is on. That's next on our agenda. But thank you very much, Natalie. Really, not Natalie, Melissa. Really appreciated that. I didn't hear anyone from any other IOC, so I don't think we're going to get updates. Action items it was interesting because I think we asked about administrative separation also, and we only got one response. The only response we got was requesting that we look into the allegation of the HIPAA violation incident when the medical provider went from the conference room to the day room. And the response was the matter was referred to the Arizona Department of Health Services privacy officer, and the investigation is currently in process. So that was a response there. And any questions before we move forward? So that was the action item. Again, next was our administrative separation concerns, and they continue. We already had the ASH update. I didn't hear anything about COVID from ASH administration, other than outings are still postponed because of the community spread is high. So that's still impacting progression. We're thinking, is it clear to everyone why or what order? I know that the CDC talks about community spread, different levels, but are we curious about who is giving the requirement that outings are canceled?
Now, I think, Lori, this is I obviously, you know, I agree with what you're saying, and I think there are a lot of issues going on here with this, and I don't feel like it's clear as to exactly what they are basing this off of. I'm not clear on who made the decision. I'm not clear on, you know, how it could be disputed if somebody wanted to dispute it, because it seems to be, you know, arbitrary reasoning. If we're still allowed to go in and visit or, you know, do anything on site, it got, you know, visitation hasn't been canceled, attorneys are coming and going, then what's the difference between that and the patients actually leaving to do whatever that could be done safely? I just think the whole thing is very confusing and not right.
So we have a specific ask of under what rules or regulation is it coming from the Department of Health, or who is telling Dr. Bowen and Dr. Woods that all outings must be canceled? Is that kind of boiled down to?
Yeah, this is Dee again. I heard that it was an administrative decision, quote unquote, and that they were following CDC guidelines. However, prior to this happening, when they stopped outings again, supposedly the requirement was that there was less than 10 per 100,000 population to, in order to open back up the outings, and that's why they were opened back up, and then all of a sudden they just shut it down, even though those guidelines were still being met.
Okay. So do you have the question on what you want to ask administration? I mean, is it under whose direction?
Correct. Under whose direction and what guidelines, and ask for specifics. What are the specific guidelines that they're following versus what they told everybody back in earlier this year? I think it was prior to March that they were waiting for the numbers to reach a certain threshold. And that's when they were starting to open up the bars and things like that again. And those, they had to meet those same guidelines. Now, all of a sudden, it appears that those guidelines have gone by the wayside, but for what reason and who made that decision and why?
Okay.
Was that too much?
Natalie? She's our note taker. She's good. So do we have a second? Okay, I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
So moved. Okay. Let's see, next. Oh, I have a bunch of action incident. Do you want the community forum report first? I have that written out first. So I'll do that quickly. So for the community forum on, let me shut the camera so I can get closer and read. The civil community meeting was September 17, 2021. And Ashley and I went to that one. So Ashley, I can go over some of my notes, or if you want to start, I can fill in. I'm fine either way.
If you don't mind, I'm going to go run and grab my notes. Give me, if you want to start, just give me 1 second. They're in another room.
Okay. So one thing, it was a nice, well-attended civil meeting with several patients that we hadn't interacted with before. Again, I think there were concerns over passes and outings and COVID restrictions. On a positive note, it was reported that the cafe was adding fun foods and juices, but not everyone liked all the flavors in the machines. Some people didn't like coconut. Some of the machines have problems accepting dollars, which is same old. You know, they like the new dollars, not the used ones. There was also a request for snacks, different snacks. They said they very rarely get cheese, maybe once a month, and they don't get any fruit. Again, the food is
healthy. Did you say they rarely get cheese, Lori?
Cheese, yes.
Okay. Yeah.
They said for cheese, it was like once a month. And they wanted healthy foods. They said people are getting fat. They want more coffee privileges with regular coffee. Another person reported that they have sensory overload in the day rooms because they said there's really not a lot of space. And it's not quiet, and the space isn't respected. There's no social distancing. The units are crowded. The units are noisy. There's constant radio or noise or TV. They'd prefer if the radio volumes were lower or people were just a little quieter. There's also a report that they can overhear staff talking about other patients very loudly. They think it's not professional and that they speak way too loudly. And some of the staff are disrespectful when they're speaking of the patients and earside of other patients.
I'm back, Lori, if you want to chime in.
Okay.
I know you talk all meeting, so I'm happy to give you a break.
Go ahead.
This was a few patients who talked about the grievance process and how it takes a while. And so by the time it gets to an interview, they kind of forget what it was even about in the first place. It sounds like the phone time changed. And so it's hard. I think the phone time was it 5 to 7, Lori? And so it's hard to make calls during that time because it conflicts with meal and med time.
Yes.
Another patient was disappointed because they canceled evening programming. And I'm not sure if that's because of COVID or staffing or what the reason behind that is. Few complaints about how between 11 and 1, there's not much to do. And so people end up just sitting around and getting agitated, which turns into a safety concern. Few patients said it's really, really cold on the unit and on their different units, and they have to sit by the window because it's freezing. Let's see what else. One thing that was interesting is the masks. Mm-hmm. So patients aren't allowed to wear masks, but they're in kind of small areas sometimes and can't social distance all the time. And so That was interesting to me with COVID going on, that masks wouldn't be an option. And we had talked about that in a previous meeting, right, Lori?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it sounds like that's still an issue. There was some issues with the vending machine. That, you know, wasn't taking that one patient's dollar, but Jackie was gonna stay with the patient and help them and make sure that they got their dollar in the machine. So that's good. Yeah, and I think different snacks. Only snack is applesauce at nighttime. They do get birthday cupcakes one time a month. Yep, Lori covered the other things I have on my list. Yeah. Did I miss anything?
The person that was talking about, another patient that was talking about staff being disrespectful, and also that she was teased by staff based on some of her past behaviors. She wanted to complete a grievance, but she couldn't by herself, and no one would help her. So
yeah,
we said that the IOC would help her complete an incident report.
Hey, Lori, this is Dee. We spoke to her as well during patient calls, and Jackie went over there because I wrote an email to Jackie requesting that she make a visit to this patient, and she had gone over there the following day and couldn't find the patient, but said she was going back again. I don't know that that actually happened, but yeah, she has been notified to go over and actually physically help her do that grievance.
Okay, we should follow up on that. And I also had a note that a certain patient, they think it would be helpful to have a weighted blanket when they have all this sensory overload. They also was a complaint that when patients have seen accidents, that the staff should be quicker to help clean them up. And the only other thing is several of the patients wanted visits, so that's why we passed it along to do the patient visit. That was civil, and then we'll go to forensic, and then go over to, you guys can give your visit report after the forensic. So on September 23rd.
Yeah, I just have one comment, Lori. It's me again, I'm sorry. So let me just ask again. So they're not allowed to wear masks at the hospital, yet they can't let people go on outings wearing masks anywhere else.
I know. It didn't make sense to us either.
Yeah.
Patients said that they wanted masks, and they were like, why can't we have masks? Actually, I don't think that Dr. Woods answered, and Dr. Bowen wasn't in the civil meeting.
Dr. Woods said she wasn't going to get into masks.
Well, it sounds very arbitrary to me. It's okay for one thing, but not for another. Just like it's okay to have visits from outside, but they can't leave. Okay. Just want to make sure we're clear on that.
Yeah, it didn't make sense to us either why they couldn't have masks. Should we ask administration and Dr. Woods why, if patients are in such close quarters and sometimes they're coughing, and then off, you know, people also move units, so it's not like the same cohort is always together. If someone
they used to be able to wear them. What changed? I mean, they were wearing them on the units most of this past year and a half. So I don't, I don't get what changed. Why is this now all of a sudden completely different? And why can't they if they want to, and not if they don't, I don't get any of it.
Yeah, I was very curious. And the only thing I could think of was some sort of safety concern with like the strings on the ear hole. I don't know. That's the only thing I thought of, but I think it's definitely worth asking. So I'll make the motion. This is Ashley.
Yeah, and I'll second it, because even if
even if that's so, then why weren't they worried about it last year? Now all of a sudden it's an issue. You can't have it both ways. You either do it for a reason or you don't. So
right. Okay. I agree.
All in favor? Aye.
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 And Larry, Barb texted me. She muted herself and she can't unmute. So if you can unmute 3-7, because I can't unmute. I don't have special powers in this meeting.
I can't unmute once they're muted. They have to unmute themselves. Star 6 won't do it.
I texted her Star 6, but she's still muted.
Okay.
Oh, there she goes.
Okay. Sorry, I think somebody had muted me.
No, I don't think. I can't mute.
Oh, no. Okay, I'm back. I mean, I've been listening, but I can.
Okay, so we'll ask about the mask. So on to the forensics. Melissa and I went on September 23rd. Nice. Large turnout with representation from each of the units. Do you want to start, Melissa, and then I'll jump in? That way you don't have to listen to me all the time.
Sure. Sorry, I'm just getting back to those notes from. Oh, yeah. Okay. So there was a lot of discussion about having some more choices in terms of like games and, you know, MP3 players, headphones, earbuds. So let's see, there's a lot of discussion about that. It looked like there were only two types available. There were requests to be able to increase the choices, but I think the response was that it would be very difficult to manage. So they were going to keep the catalog, I think, the way that they currently have it.
Well, they took all of their players away from them anyway yesterday after the incident. So
okay.
That's almost a moot point at this point.
Mm-hmm. So this is a big discussion, you know, there was quite a bit of discussion around the progress of the outings.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to talk some more about that here?
Well, I think it's, again, a continued concern of the patients and of ours. We think that, you know, as we've mentioned it many times, I mentioned it in the forum as well. Can't they think of something else, having outings on the ground? But can't they do something different? Go to low capacity areas, go to the park, you know, staff come in and out every day. So restricted to only vaccinated people can go off grounds. Maybe they have to test when they come back, you know, but something to indicate that they've earned or demonstrated the behaviors. So,
hey, Lori, I think unless we start pushing them harder and harder on that, they're just going to keep ignoring us like they have been. So I don't know what the next step is, but I think that, you know, over a year and a half without outings is more than enough. Something needs to change. They've had plenty of time to figure it out.
And I think that, you know, my conversation today with administration after the incident was, well, you know, we've been saying it's been our concern for a long time that the hospital come up with alternative methods to demonstrate readiness, behavior, progress. I think people are losing hope. And I mean, how much more can you get that says I'm hopeless than suicide, right? I think that we need to ask whether we go to the Department of Health and ask why is this the rule right now, or whether we ask for a meeting with the governor and ask what their opinion is. I mean, we can do that if we vote on it. We can say we want to try to do both.
Well, I vote that we approach the governor. I think he's probably the quickest way to get anything done. However, I don't know that that's an option.
And I'd say not to limit our options. Maybe we try the governor's office and also try the Department of Health, since they are under the Department of Health. So if we agree.
Well, I motion that we do that. If anybody, I don't know if we're at that point, Lori.
We can. I mean, it's been since COVID began and we're not seeing any changes. So
yeah, there's no attempt. There's not even an attempt to change it. Yeah. Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, so it passes. One thing, Larry, just on a point of protocol, how many committee members can we have to have under five to go to the meeting, right? Otherwise, we break public meeting law, open meeting law.
Correct.
Correct? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So the first floor of us can go when we set up the meeting, when we send out the note of when and where they'll be.
Okay.
Okay, so that was a major thread. And Melissa, continue, and I have a bunch.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so then there was another concern about, you know, why aren't food visits allowed? You know, the families.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, why can't the family bring the food, but they don't have to eat? The patient can eat. Because I guess there's been some other problems in the past. So, you know, that was definitely a concern that was brought up. And I think Dr. Bowen, it looked like, at least in my notes, I had that he was going to, you know, try to mandate masks and only the patient can eat. I think that's where that was left.
Yeah. I think that what happened was some family members were eating and they took their mask off and then someone got COVID and so everything got canceled. No more food visits. And what most of the patients were saying in the room was that when our families come, they generally only bring food. And Dr. Bowen, when we suggested, couldn't they just make the rule that only the patient could eat? And Dr. Bowen, I think, responded that they don't have staffing to put extra staffing to watch that someone has a mask. And then someone piped in saying they already do that. If someone's mask comes down under their nose, security immediately comes in and says, pull your mask back up. So they're already doing it. So with that, it seemed like it would be easy to do since they already are monitoring the masking. So. And the other thing I had as far as the catalog was that the frustration was that this catalog that they do use is more expensive. So there was a request that if we have the same exact approved MP3 player, could we order it from Amazon? The same one, not a different model. And the answer was no, because they couldn't manage more than one vendor. So.
I think part of the problem with that too is that they, like you said, they can't manage more than one vendor. Those vendors maybe were not vetted. So they would have to completely look at, right, whatever the item was that comes in. Yeah.
And
actually, they were allowing things from Amazon and other places before. So Amazon was an approved vendor that they used for years up until they decided they were going to go with this company that follows along the same line as the correctional system, and that's where everything changed.
And I think the problem with this place is that price is high and the quality is often low, and someone complained about something coming in broken, an alarm or a game or MP3, reading lights, things like that.
Well, plus I don't think they have much recourse if something breaks. They can't, in those correctional like catalogs, I don't think they really have much of an option as far as sending it back. I think they have to just buy another one.
Hmm. Okay.
There's some other things. There were comments about the barbershop. Right, and hopefully for haircuts, but also they, you know, talked about braiding and dyeing hair, and someone spoke up about, you know, they had been there on and off for 18 years and previously had been allowed to dye their hair, and commented, you know, it's self-care and life skill and it's negatively affecting their self-esteem. And discussion went on about the potential harsh chemicals, you have to be supervised. And until there's a barber, they don't want to order, you know, the dye for someone to do it themselves. But then there's also chemical-free products.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Which part? About the hair dye?
Yeah, was that the chemical-free? Is that what you said?
Yes, I'm saying, okay. I'm just saying that, but that's my commentary, that there's also chemical free.
I didn't hear it.
Exactly. I actually have some stuff that's all natural and it smells good and there's no chemicals in it and it works great. So there are options out there.
It didn't seem like the nurse, the chief nurse was open.
Right.
I said, what about giving them goggles? Like a no. Yeah.
Yeah, or sign a release, I think. I don't know if you or someone else said that, but yeah. There was, so the turnaround rates for the grievances was somewhat slow. But, you know, Ash commented that, you know, there was a backlog. And that they had caught up, so hopefully they, you know, they wouldn't see a delay anymore. Let's see. There was a problem on Pinion about spoiled milk. The hospital's following up. It seems to be that it's happening mostly when it's hotter and the milk is closer to expiration. There was other food issues too, the hamburgers, you know, the chicken is sometimes pink, you know, so anyway, I think they're following up with the vendor.
Yeah, they said that, you know, they downgraded hamburger buns, they need more ranch packets. I think the unit themselves said that they think that it's not always expiration, but it's also the method where they put the cold food on top of the hot food in the Arizona sun. So by the time it gets to them, it's spoiled, that they need to improve the process of food delivery to the units. Yeah. And that undercooked pink chicken, they were left without any protein to eat. And they said that staff should have filed an incident report on the food delivery service. And then there's been food shortages, right? Too.
Someone else requested pet therapy. Let's see. There was another comment about... Or I guess a question about if the staff undergo evaluations.
Mm-hmm.
and they talked about one incident, one alleged incident when I guess somebody was disrespectful to another patient. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I actually said they recommended that they file an incident report.
And they take it very seriously when they have complaints mm-hmm. about staff, temporary staff concerns. But they also said they take it seriously if it's about a permanent employee also. So to file mm-hmm. incident reports.
And somebody else asked for, you know, instead of Splenda, can they get Stevia? Because they're looking for a more health, you know, a more an alternate sugar substitute.
Yeah, but overall, I think the main complaints on both units were more about. On the civil side, it was more about the environment, noisy, cold, grievance process. On the forensic side, it's mostly COVID-related with lack of progress, those major concerns, or the catalog and getting things, or the hair dye, which to me, it's such a shame that they went most of 18 years and they could do it, now they can't. So. Okay, so for the visits, I wasn't on the visit, so you guys can report what happened on your visits.
So did Ash or Alice send you her note? She said she was going to send you her note. This is the
I didn't get them. Let me do another check to make sure.
Okay. well, I'll go ahead and start while you look, because I didn't organize things like she did. So first off, we had four patients that wanted have a call, and it appeared that none of them, I mean zero out of four, had any idea we were calling or when. So that's an issue right off the bat. So two of them were from civil and two of them were from forensic. We did speak to one patient on the civil side and two on the forensic side. So the civil patient, her biggest complaint was that the staff was making her feel worthless and told her that she was the most selfish person in the world. By a particular female tech, which I do have a name. I don't know that I should say it, but I have it if anybody wants it, and wouldn't give her a pen or pencil to actually write the grievance that she wanted to file. That's when I contacted Jackie, actually, as though we were on the phone. I contacted Jackie via email and let her know that she needed assistance. She also stated that she had been swallowing things, rocks, plastic, coins, and a variety of other items. I'm not sure where she's getting them from. And she does this because of the way the staff makes her feel. And she wanted somebody to, you know, take her to the hospital because she was having shortness of her breath and sharp stomach pain. So hopefully, you know, Jackie went over and did speak to her about that. We haven't followed up on that. We haven't heard from her. So I'm hoping that, maybe we should, follow up with Jackie and make sure that she, looked into both of those. She felt like, patient felt like the staff was not paying attention to her medical needs. And then there was a patient over on Desert Sage. They said there was nobody by that name that we contacted that unit. And they couldn't figure out who we were talking about, and that was all we had. And that was from the text that I pulled off my phone. And then there was a patient on Mojave who had been moved there recently. But prior to being moved, when he was in the previous unit over on Sago, the treatment team actually had moved him to physically live in the treatment room where there's a camera, which he found very upsetting, to say the least. And then he was moved over to Mojave, and and stated to us that administration, meaning Dr. Woods and Dr. Bowen, decided to put him in a program that will move him every 3 to 5 months, quote unquote, so he can focus on himself. Clearly, that's not enough time for anybody to become acclimated to a unit, let alone have a treatment team find that they can make any progress when some of these people can't make any progress after having been there for years because of the treatment team and how they perceive things. And he also talked about his medical issues, stating that he was referred out to the Mayo Clinic and that he was told by the primary care provider that the Mayo wants $5,000 to do the assessment on him and to determine what type of treatment he needs. And it sounds like he needs surgery, and very important surgery. So I'm not sure how those types of things are resolved as far as following up on medical issues at the hospital, whether or not they refused to pay the $5,000 or if it was in some sort of a discussion or anything else. So, but let's see if I have anything else. Nope, that's it.
Okay, so Alice.
And that was my very quick version.
Alice did send me her notes at 4:25, and I didn't see them come in late. But she said she didn't have her computer with her, but she did take pictures of her notebook. And same thing about the person self-harming, and also about we had reported that she needed help writing a grievance. As far as the other patient with, when we've asked about medical concerns before, they said, you know, the patients are there under the state's care. So if they have something that's medically necessary, then they should get that. So if it's medically necessary, they should escalate and ask for that treatment. I think it's up
yeah,
to
I believe that the patient, yeah, mother and guardian has been paying for a lot of what's been going on here, and that it's fairly, in my opinion, it's absolutely ludicrous and unfair that the family should have to come out of pocket to get things done because the hospital is refusing to do that. That's blatant neglect and the treatment.
Okay, and on the other patient, I got the names and units again from Jackie.
Okay.
So let me.
Well, they nobody knew that we were calling. It was really a problem. It wasted a lot of time, you know, especially because we had a name that they said there's nobody on this unit. Can you tell us more? And then they were like, "Who are you again? Why are you calling?" And just things like that. As you know, we've experienced this before, but this one was even worse than some of the previous calls. So anyway, that's unfortunate. I mean, those types of things need to be clearly stated for the patient so they know to be prepared and ready and in the vicinity, because I think the first guy that was over on the civil unit was in the bathroom or something. So they... You know, we waited for a little while, but then we just moved on to the next patient.
Yeah, and I think, however we tried to do it, you know, like, I made sure again, make sure they know we're calling, here's the time that it's going to happen. So they get, and they said they're going to call down and make sure, but you guys have heard, you know, who are you, and what do you want, and we can't do this.
Yeah, and when the calls happen, when the patient phones aren't open, because they're not, during certain hours, it makes it a little bit more difficult, as you know, but it seems completely unfair to the patients, and, you know, most first and foremost, and us secondly, that, you know, we're running into this problem consistently, and it doesn't seem like it should be that difficult for this to occur, and that there needs to be, you know, some changes made so that these types of things aren't happening. And it gets kind of at the point where it's unacceptable for us just to sit back and go, oh, well, hopefully they'll do it next time.
Yeah. And I do reach out. I did reach out and ask to make sure that the announcements were posted in all the units, and I was told yes, they were ahead of time, because we've heard that, but we'll continue to bring that up again, because it continues to be a problem. And I think, to be fair to the patients, I would actually like them to, if we're going to call, I don't think we should have to call the patient line or the patient number. We should say we're calling at this time. Can you have a conference room or an area available so they can speak with some privacy?
Yeah, I think that we went directly through all the nursing stations when we did that. And, you know, for the patients we could identify and talk to, they were put in a conference room where they could speak to us.
Okay, we'll try that next time. I'll send out a long email and request who we're calling, when we're calling. Because we do, it takes twice as much time to talk to a patient, just getting to them through the operator, the multiple transfers. Yeah. It's always a challenge. Okay, any other visits?
Nope, that was it.
Okay. So are we ready to go over some IRs? I'll try to be fast.
Yeah.
So, Natalie, slow me down if you miss something. So Ash, 3634. A person got into they ran into the nurse's station and took a swig of hand sanitizer that was on a lanyard. So they called poison control. And they flushed it with they flushed it out, and the patient felt okay. But the staff was reminded again when coming and going from the nurse's bubble mat to open the door if the patient is immediately there to prevent them from getting sanitizer, dispensers, or DTO, DPS behaviors. So that was follow up after they reviewed the incident. This one, let's see. This one was an example of, I think, good feedback from the staff. It was Ash 2021-3647. They were ready to go outside to the library for a group, and four patients attempted to go through the door at the same time, and someone decided to stop everyone, and so then there was a little shoving match. But instead of calling a code or doing anything like that, they were redirected, and then both were they were told, you know, redirected on what appropriate behavior was, what proper behavior is when leaving the unit, and what's expected of them. And then everyone was able to go on to the library, so it didn't have to escalate into an incident. So I thought that was good, because usually when something like that happens, it's like, oh no, they can't leave. So that was, I thought, good. This one, another incident of good behavior. It was 2021-3665. This occurred when a meal came, and the meal items were touching each other, and this person is very sensitive to that. So they were trying to transfer it to a different plate, and it became more mixed, so that was a problem. So food got thrown. Then they wanted a full new order with nothing touching. By that point, there wasn't any. So they were offered a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but the person, you know, refused, wanting the original meal, but it wasn't possible. So again, you know, they had a discussion and tried to talk about how they could work on this in the future, but it was more cooperative. That was good. Another one, 2021-3705. This person was swallowing crayons, and they wanted to go to the ER to get the get rid of the crayons. They did assess and felt that the person didn't need to go over to Valley Wise, but they then assisted the patient to wear a jumpsuit to stop the self-harm behaviors. Next one was 2021-3707. This person was sitting in the front entrance area of a unit because they pushed the door when housekeeping entered, and they refused to communicate and return back to the unit day room. So they walked to the exit door and began kicking it and not redirecting, not stopping. And they were able to kick and pop open the outside exit door. That kind of struck me because I was thinking, it's a locked unit. You know, you usually can't kick it open. But the staff was close enough to grab a handle, close it, and hold on to it closed as the patient continued to kick the exit door. It popped open again, but staff was still holding the door, so it was pulled shut immediately. But they continued to kick the door and would not stop, so a code gray was called. I just felt it was kind of surprising they could kick open the locked door. That's one. Two, there was a note that it should be noted it occurred 15 minutes after this person attempted to climb a fence outside wall and open mall time. So they were already in the escalated mode. I found that unusual. Next one was 2021-3729. And this person was in the day room. They were tearing down the base of the wall in the day room through a big piece of debris with sharp nails at staff once and attempted to throw another. Again, I mean, I'm just surprised at how you can get pieces of wall apart. I don't know if it's just me that finds that kind of surprising.
No, I think
you're not the only one, Lori.
Yeah, and we've asked over and over, what do they do about maintenance and how are they addressing it? And I'm always satisfied with their answers that they do it routinely, but then like the behaviors kind of show that there's something else happening, you know.
I know. It's always something. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And the next one is 2021-3749. This person swallowed four quarters, and they're on a one-on-one COS and line of sight. But her BHT was not present, which is a contradiction.
Lori, can you repeat the number on this one, please?
It's 2021-3749.
Great, thank you.
And it said this was a registry BHT staff, so that could be that she wasn't fully aware of procedure. So the writer of the incident re-educated the registry nurse about what the COS expectations were and wrote a review reflecting that and submitted it to the PNOM.
Because the terminology one-on-one is so confusing.
That's why I pulled it, because it's like, how could you not know? But so as far as the patient was concerned, the doctor did order bowel assessment radiology at Valley Wise for the quarters. And again, they were educating the staff person on what COS means, line of sight at all times, and the person remains on COS LOS for self-harm prevention. Let's see. Here's another 2021-3752. Patient was peeling a safety tag off a fire safety cabinet, and they were redirected. Then they started tearing up a book that belonged to a peer. Again, it was just these self-harm behaviors. So they were, and the patient has a history of self-harm when put in seclusion, so then they have to put the patient in restraints to keep them safe. So as you see, and we have the seclusion and incident report, it's a small number of people that are patients that are responsible for a large number of the minutes or hours or number of incidents. They're dominated by a few. Let's see. This one, 2021-3759. This patient was covering themselves with a blanket, and when they asked to remove, they noticed the finger was stained with blood. So they called and they found a piece of broken ceramic tile, which the person used to cut the top of their head, 4 inches long. Medical alert was called. Fire truck came, took them to the hospital. When asked how they got the piece of ceramic, they said they got it from the mall when they went to visit the mall library. So again, this was a piece of ceramic tile, broken. They may need to order a suicide blanket, and they need to get a pat down every time the person's off the unit or back on the unit. So, and it is surprising. And this one is the last one, 2021-3764. Again, a patient and just attacked another patient a couple times in the head. They talked about how the person was, thought the other person was disrespecting them. And this has been going on. So what I noted as good at the bottom, the patients attending psychiatrist and social worker informed, again, of the patient's continued aggressive behavior. The patients attending psychiatrist put the patient on involuntary med treatment plan. So, so I was glad to see that that was done. Again, for the units, for the perpetrators and the offenders, the top assaults were again done by primarily, by a few people, and restraints were dominated by, I'd say, three, and then it starts falling off. So that was incident and accident. We covered the forums, membership recruitment. We have someone on the unit that would like to join, and they're encouraged. We've had patients that are still on the facility as part of the HRC before. So I would just suggest, if you're a patient and want to be on the IOC, reach out to Jackie to fill out the application. Then she can turn it in to Larry, who will send it to us. Any new business? Now, we did have another virtual visit today, an important one. So several of us were on the call. So you don't have to listen to me. Anyone else that was on the call today, do you guys want to recap what we heard about the incident yesterday and the administration response or what the patients have been told or not told.
I can do it.
Okay.
This is Ashley. So what we heard from the patient we spoke to today that was in relation to the suicide, that the patient we talked to relayed that they had heard that the patient lost privileges, after the incident, I'm getting my notes confused. Hold on one second. So, okay. The patient had lost some privileges and was really depressed for a few months and kind of fell behind. The patient said that I think we talked about what had happened in the beginning of the meeting, but essentially the hospital's response is that no one has said a word. So everything that we heard was all word of mouth from that patient and from some of the people who were in the group when it happened. It sounds like all pens, pencils, DVDs, video games, razors, fingernail clippers were taken from all patients. And all patients now have to write with crayons. Unclear if that's like a long-term thing or a short-term thing. And the patient said that the hospital, the patient has heard that shoelaces and cords and other things are the next thing that are going to be taken away. So that's kind of my recap on what we heard the hospital's response was.
And anyone else?
I'm not sure, Ashley. Did you say? I guess they heard that there may be there may be a comprehensive search. Again, this is not something that happened. It's something that may happen. I mean, that goes to the shoelaces that you just talked about. But you did a good job. I think that was everything.
I think the other thing that seemed upsetting was that the patient said it wasn't a surprise to any of the other patients that this patient was depressed. They could all see it. So that the patient was really unhappy after being moved back, but also was really disappointed because they have a collection and they had asked with the recreational staff that I'll not name her, but if the hospital wants the name, I'll give it to them, that they wanted to demo their stamp collection because they were very proud of it. Mm-hmm. And they had already gotten approval from another staff at recreation, but this other person who allegedly is mean, condescending, and rude, said no, and almost that they couldn't show their stamp collection. So the day of, they had their stamp collection out and was working with it. That was one. And two, I thought it was when the incident happened, in any closed system, word of mouth is going to happen. But the people that were in the recreational area saw some stuff, but didn't know what. But when they came through different units and they were taking away their DVDs, their CDs, their MP3s, their razors, other things, there was no explanation offered. So I thought, that's unfortunate because I think grief counseling should be offered and they should have a reason, a plan of why things are being taken away and why. So it was just very sad, very, very, very sad for the other patients, the patients that are losing hope. And I'm sure sad for staff also.
Yeah, Lori, I was going to bring up the sort of conflict of, you know, what you brought up earlier about the grief counseling and just again now, and the sort of word of mouth. And is that something that did we already? Do we need to ask Ash? I don't know.
Policy? Yeah, what's your policy on helping people deal with trauma, one, and what's your policy? And when there is a policy change, how does it roll out?
Well, Lori, that, you know, as things sit, they haven't even told you what happened, let alone they haven't told the patients what happened. So until that's addressed, how is anybody going to get any grief counseling if they're not telling anybody anything, like it never happened? And unfortunately, you know,
I did get a text today asking me to call because they had a sentinel event. And, you know,
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I did get a call today, and they told me what had happened, and that Dr. Woods and others were looking further into the incident, but that the police were notified at once, and the patient was transferred to Valley Wise, where he was pronounced dead, or passed away there. But if there's a motion for what happens when bad things happen, is there a group counseling? I think when that person passed away on choking, I thought they were offering grief counselors on the civil, but maybe I'm confused.
Well, I will motion that we, you know, make that recommendation. Seems like that should be an offer that would be coming from the hospital directly without that, but I believe that we should motion that they be discussed with the hospital.
Do we have a second?
A second. It's Melissa.
Melissa. All in favor?
Sorry, first one was Z. Aye.
Okay. Anyone opposed? Okay. We can go into public comment, and then Alice cannot be here for her, but she did give me a debrief of her review of records, and then I know Ashley and Melissa have gone over there, so we can go into a quick executive session after public comment. So if we have public comment, remember to let us know your name, whether or not you want to be in the minutes, and we'll restrict it to 3 minutes since we're going long. So anyone like to speak tonight? Remember, *6 for the units.
No, okay, it's okay. Am I being heard?
Yes, you are.
Thank you. I just have, I think, about four or five comments. I just want to say that it's not...
Can you share your name, and do you want it in the notes?
Oh, okay, they can catch that. Okay, my name is Rodney Woodville. I'm on Cottonwood Unit, and you can leave this in the on record.
Thank you.
Okay. I just want to mention that I don't believe it's ADOA's Arizona Department of Administration's purpose to set set rules concerning complaints voiced by patients during public comments. I do just want to reiterate on this, we weren't allowed to, we to use our rotary shavers. That's a violation of AAC, our right to our dignity and right to have hygiene. I wasn't allowed to shave today. The shavers really have nothing to do with the instrument that was used. The instrument was in rehab that the man used to do the self-harm. I think it's a conflict of interest. I don't know why on earth they went on and they have to say, Correctional Institute, they keep hammering this home, Correctional Institute, we are not a correctional institution. For a mental health rehab facility to use Correctional Institute, we're not incarcerated, we're held in a safe environment, we're not incarcerated. As far as this person taking his life, they really set us up for failure because when they take your levels and they move you down, they don't just take you down a level or two in your level system. They take you all the way down to 1 to 5. It takes years to get back up to the CRU units to the level 3 or 2 or whatever it is that it is. It takes years. So they set us up for failure, and they give us a sense of loss of hope. They give us a total, the man that is in question of that did this, I was on the unit with just 2 weeks ago, and I was a peer support for him. They could see that I had a lot of interaction with him. We played on a little miniature pool table that rehab had brought over, and I was a lot of support for him. And then they moved me from the unit, and they wouldn't give me a reason for the move, but they just said it was administrative. I think they figured that I was enabling the man or something with a snack or so or something, and they were trying to monitor his blood sugar level. And I hear that this is hearsay, that just the reason that they moved him from CRU is because of his weight and his blood sugar problem. And that he was in, he told me that it was because he was non-compliant. And they, whatever.
3 minutes, Rodney. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Rodney. Anyone else?
Hi, this is Matthew Solon on the Opinion Unit.
Do you want your name in a minute?
Sure.
Okay, Matthew.
I wanted to let you know two things. I don't know if you can give me, probably can't give me a response to it right now, but I've been trying to get a hold of you for 3 months. I've been telling Jackie probably every 2 weeks. I've been leaving her voicemail, and she's insisting that she's forwarding an email to you and is not getting a response. Nobody here believes that, but just so you know, I do want to have a meeting with you because I have a lot of material I want to go over with you that wouldn't be able to fit in 3 minutes we have here. Also, in regards to animal assisted therapy that some people were asking for at the patient forum, I have been ordered by the administrative law judge. Ash has been ordered to add animal assisted therapy to my treatment plan after months long appeal process. It was found in my favor. However, Ash is still claiming they can't find anyone that can come in and perform the therapy. I know at one point you guys had said you had found some people and forwarded it to Ash, but that Ash is refusing to let them come do it. So I'm right now under a court order to receive it, and Ash can't find anyone or claims they can't find anyone to do animal assisted therapy. So if you guys could look into that some more, it'd be good. And that's all I have for now. I think the rest of the material I need to go over with you, I'd like to do it when we have a longer opportunity.
Thank you, Matt. Matthew. Do we have anyone else? Anyone else from public?
Hi, this is Timothy Berbrisco from Mojave.
Hi,
Tim. Yes, I would like them in the minutes. I kind of forgot what unit was on. I would appreciate it if I could get a call from you guys on the computer or on the phone. So I have quite a few things I'd like to talk to you about. Like last time, there was no information on what day you were calling or what time. It's just they come to the unit, either you're ready or you're not. And I would like to be able to be prepared this time. So if you could make Jackie aware to let us be informed on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to be contacted by you ladies, please.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. And I appreciate everything you guys do for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone else from the public?
Laurie, if there's not at the end, or I don't know if it's okay protocol for me to help clarify maybe the comment on the earlier comment about the corrections.
We can't comment on public comment, but
I see. Okay.
If we wanted to put that into our next month's meeting, we could.
Okay, because I think it would be good if I clarified the connection. Yeah.
Do we have anyone else from the public?
Cooper Gann from Sago.
What was the name again? Sorry about that.
Clifford Gant.
Oh, hi, Clifford. Do you want your name in the minutes?
Sure.
Okay. How are you tonight?
I'm doing okay. I think I just wanted to bring up a couple points. I haven't prepared anything, but I think it's a pretty dangerous precedent when one person's actions affect the 99 or the majority. I think that it's very unfortunate what happened, and I am kind of taking that into account, but with an overreaction over everything that happens, I mean, one time, you know, somebody gets, you know, stabbed with a pen and they take all the rigid pens from us. And this is happening on units that I can't be over at or any of us, you know, saying it's just really compartmentalized, but we're at a mental hospital. And so people are going to make some not wise choices from time to time. But to punish those people that are actually actively trying to progress and further, I mean, this is already a pretty dim scenario here at the hospital with COVID and with the lack of forward progress for a lot of people. And then to keep restricting at every kind of moment, just like how the U.S. government, like, never waste an opportunity to never let a crisis go to waste. I think that's kind of like the inverse of what the hospital is doing. They're seeing something that happens and then all of a sudden it's all of our fault. And that's not us. I mean, this is something that should have probably been recognized to a point. I mean, it was really enlightening to hear you tell that story about the stamp collection, because I didn't talk to you, but I was there when that, like at the precipice on Monday, when that whole thing started. So it was enlightening to hear that you got that story. But it's just frustrating. And I think that it might go to show another swarm of, I'm not saying self-harm or whatever, but just the dire situation and the lack of hope that's going on here. And that's just going to continue more and more as we keep going on and this boa constrictor keeps taking the little things that we have. I mean, to blanket policy, no sharps of any kind to be allowed, like there's going to be a swarm of self-harm to show condolences or something to this is just ridiculous. I think that also the hair dye scenario, I mean, it's really difficult when you have something for so long and then it gets taken away
arbitrarily, it's just real frustrating. So thank you guys again for what you do. I don't know.
Well, I was just going to follow up. Hi, my name is Emily. I'm also a patient at Stego. Like, I was going to follow up with, why is it that the patients always wind up losing things as opposed to holding doctors responsible who should have seen this coming? Like, they're paid professionals who should be able to see if somebody's at suicidal risk or not. Why is it that we get our things taken from us and the doctors just walk away scot-free? Like, it just seems like a very backward system here. That's all I have to say. Why are the doctors not held accountable, and why is it that we lose more freedom?
Thank you. I'll put that in the notes. Can you repeat your name, and do you want your name in the notes?
Hey, my name is Kay Coons, and yes, I would like my name in the notes.
I'm so sorry. Can you say your name slower one more time? I apologize.
Sorry. My first name is Kay, K-A-Y. My last name is Coons, K-U-N-E-S.
Thank you so much, Kay.
You're welcome. I think that was all from Stego, so thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else? If not, we have motion to adjourn to executive session.
I motion. I second. Or second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Who motioned?
Aye.
I'm so sorry.
I think Dee motioned and Barb seconded.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Dee motioned first.
So everyone on patients, we just want to say we feel very bad for what's happened and what is happening, and don't lose hope. And if you would like a call, tell Jackie, and we always respond when we get calls. So if you haven't gotten a call from us, we haven't gotten a message. So we did hear some tonight. Get back with you guys, and we'll send notes to the via the hospital to make sure everyone's notified when we'll call. But thank you guys. Have a good night. And for the committee members, if you can stay on for executive session, and Larry, you can do your magic on stopping recording.
Yes, ending now.
Okay. Okay, so everyone that's not part of executive session.